over 60 years. So this was a lifelong project.
Hello, welcome back to Fresh Start, How to Become a Game Developer. My name is Adam Ardisasmita, CEO of Arsenicia and Vice President of Indonesia Game Association, and I'm going to be your host for today's episode. As usual, in this podcast, we will talk about anything related to the game development industry and how to start your career and jump into the game industry. We will invite experts and someone who've been in this industry for so long to tell us their journey, their experience, their knowledge. So maybe their story can inspire us. So we hope this podcast can help you to start jumping into the game industry, right? So stay tuned, because this is right now we are in the season 3 of Fresh Start, and new episode is coming every Monday. So, and don't forget, this podcast is brought to you by Indonesia Game Association and Goethe Institute Jakarta. Today we have a very, very special guest from Germany. The guest for today, let's invite them. We have Dennis and Christina. Hi.
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 Hello. How are you?
Very good. No. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. By the way, Dennis, Christina, in what city are you at right now?
We're in Germany, in Mainz. It's located in Rheinland-Pfalz.
I see. And I saw on the back of your window, the weather is quite good.
Yes. Yeah. It's really lovely today. Not too hot. Quite nice.
I see. I think, is it summer already or?
Yeah, we're just like the 30 degree mark last week. So it's kind of hot for our notion here.
Ah, that's nice. All right. Okay. Before we start, maybe you can give a little introduction about your background right now. Maybe who want to start first, Christina or Dennis?
So I'm Christina Eichhorn. I'm 39 years old, and originally back in the days I studied literature, and then became a journalist, like in a real classical way. I wrote for a local newspaper for many years, and then in 2015, I changed a little bit my work destination and started at ZDF Digital. And after a while, I arrived at this VR place.
Interesting. Okay, thank you, Christina. And how about you, Dennis?
Yeah, my name is Dennis, and I'm mostly a 3D artist. I studied media design here in Mainz in Germany, and this was like the starting point of everything gaming related. So I like gaming in my spare time, and there was some kind of colleague of mine who was really into gaming and thought, even before he started studying, he wanted to do gaming. And then he was like, I need some support. How about you? Do you want to start? And I said, well, of course, let's try. And so it like was more like more make the hobby a profession and go this route while studying. And then I ended up at ZDF Digital as a student and then as a permanently employed.
Oh, so you've been working there since student?
Yeah. I started while I was studying, and then it was like a seamless transition over to the permanent employment.
All right. Thank you, Christina and Dennis, for the introduction. All right, before we start talking about your journey from the beginning until now you are right now, usually in Press Start, we have some trivial question that we are going to ask to our guests. Don't worry, it's not a hard question, and there's no right or wrong, and there's no leaderboard, so don't worry. All right, so the first question that we usually ask our guests in Pre-Start, maybe I'm going to start with Christina first. Christina, do you remember what is the title of a game or video game that you ever played?
I
quite well remember it was Tetris on the Game Boy. Like, I was so obsessed. I don't know exactly. I think I was 8 or 9 years old, maybe. And I got that big Game Boy and Tetris. And I was so obsessed with playing it that at one point I had to stop because when I closed my eyes, I was still playing. I don't know if that's common problem, but I definitely had that problem. And then afterwards, like the Super Mario Land, so the classic start.
I see. Is it like your parents have like the Game Boy, or is it belong to your friends? Where did you get the first Game Boy?
I think I wanted to have one because my friends had them. So I think it was a present, but I can't recall anymore whether it was Christmas or birthday, but must have been a special occasion. And I loved my Game Boy. I think I still have it at home somewhere. So
really?
Maybe it's still working. I don't know. I have to try it.
I see. So it's safe to say that in your environment, like in your family, like game is part of the family, right? Because some family, maybe they restrict playing games, something like that.
I think back in the days, it was so new that parents wasn't even aware of that maybe you should restrict it, you know? So I was free to play as long as I wanted. And so I think the kids today struggle more with restrictions. But yes, we were the pioneers, so to say. So we could just play as long as we wanted.
Well, that is really interesting. And how about you, Dennis? Do you remember the first game that you ever played?
Yeah, I don't think it's the first game I've ever played. I don't know exactly what it was, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But I remember one of the first game which really was in my mind. I'm like a big fan of the Final Fantasy series, and I started with Final Fantasy VII. So it was the game which brought me into gaming, which was like so vast and complex that I had to that I was like, this is kind of fun. You can do this, and you can do that, and you can do that, and you're. It's not like watching a movie. You have to do. You can do some things on your own. So this was like the first thing which really stuck into my mind, that you're more free than just watching the screen and waiting for things to happen.
Was it in PlayStation 1 or 2?
It was PlayStation 1.
One, right?
The original PlayStation 1, like the gray box with the disc cartridge on the
memory card on it.
Yeah. What's a memory card? Yeah.
Yes, you need to have memory card, right? To save
the file. Kind of struggle, so you have to do it over again.
Yes. All right, so for you is Final Fantasy VII, and for Christina is Tetris. And the next question is start from Dennis first. If you're talking about the first game, can you remind us the last game that you play, the last title that you play before this recording session?
I think it was just yesterday. It was another Final Fantasy, but Final Fantasy 14, the online 14. MMO.
The online.
Yeah, we have some colleagues at work who are also playing this, and we just go to get together after work. We say, hey, what do you want to do this evening? So just sit together and have a chat, what happened at work, and maybe just have the day go out smoothly, just talking about stuff which happened, and get everything from the soul so that you have just a nice talk, a nice chat while playing at the sides.
Wow, that's interesting. I think that's one of the best MMO games right now, right? The Final Fantasy.
Yeah, that's the reason why we started playing it, because we heard about the hype and wanted to see, because it's like some kind of research, and and you have the hype about it, and you want to know why there is such a hype, and then if you can enjoy it and learn something from it, so why don't you do it? That's because we started looking into it.
Awesome. All right, thank you, Dennis. And how about you, Christina? The last game that you played?
It was also for research reasons, but it's a while because it was for the research for Goethe VR. And actually with the name, Dennis has to help me because we had made like this whole VR night, and we played like several things like with that sailor man thing.
Yeah.
So he knows the names.
A Fisherman's Tale.
Fisherman's Tale, for example, but like several stuff, just to see how VR really works, because I'm not coming from the gaming direction. That's not my mm-hmm. background. I'm more like the old school book nerd. I'm more good in storytelling, and my team, or our team, and especially Dennis and also Dominic, they helped me with the background of getting to know VR and the whole gaming background. So therefore it was also for research.
I see. I think your job is quite interesting because you can play games as part of the job.
It's private business, and then it's, of course, we had this research at work, but for those reasons, as Christina said, so we wanted to get into VR, so we need to see what other people do in VR, so we need to. But yeah, it's kind of quite interesting. I give you that.
Yes, it's true, and especially like in video games, usually story is one of the most important things, right? And that's where. Your skill set, like Christina mentioned, like you're in storytelling, it's really important to be the part of the games, right? That's interesting. Okay, third question. We still have two more questions, don't worry. The third question, I think from Christina first. Besides playing video games, or maybe you don't really play video game heavily, what is your other things to do for fun or just hobbies?
I'm so sorry. It's so boring because with me, it's always literature. Like I read as much as I can. And, also like I'm really interested in storytelling in general. So also I think I can't watch a movie or watch a series without permanently thinking about how to develop a character, how to build tension, how the dramaturgy works. That was so much fun also with our project that I could put everything in it, and the guys helped me with the gaming background.
What kind of book or movies or usually books that you read that I think your favorite, the genre or maybe the titles?
It's mostly novels. It's fictional novels, and it's mostly novels that are that show some sort of a reality of today. So I'm constantly looking for the truth in the books that somehow speaks to me, you know. So maybe it's also a bit therapeutic, like, and this is what it's really getting me. So common American novelists, for example, but it's modern literature mostly.
Oh, that's really interesting. And if do you have like top novel like all time that you really like?
There are several like all-time books. I think, for example, The Catcher in the Rye is some book that maybe people know. Or I have to think about the English name. I think about the English name and I'm going to trouble later. But it's like a mixture of classical literature. Or for example, Bonjour Tristesse. It's like from a French novelist. Those were mostly classics I said now. So it's not only modern literature I'm just getting. So it's a mix. But Bonjour Tristesse and... I really don't recall that English name.
Just say the German one if you like, maybe.
It's Wer die Nachtigall stört. It's like from Harper Lee. It's like something with a mockingbird. I don't know the English name anymore, but it's also a classic.
How to Kill a Mockingbird? No.
Yes, thank you.
That's right. Oh, all right.
Thank you. Yes. I see. That's the English title. Yeah. So this is also one of my favorite. I read it every couple of years, and it spoke to me as a 12-year-old, also as a 20-year-old, and so on. So this is really a lifelong companion for a book, I would say.
Wow, amazing. Thank you, Christina. And how about you, Dennis? Besides, you're more in the gamer side, like besides playing video games, what do you do for fun?
Yeah, actually, it's kind of related. I'm doing my job for fun, so I'm really into environment art. And there are some I like doing those I found it on Facebook, actually. There was something called Spit Paints, and it's just like you get some kind of topic, and then you take yourself a self-imposed 30-minute timer, and then you're going to do something about that topic, like for example, I don't know, let's go for a thick jungle. So then you're going to get, you have 30-minute time to either paint or model or in 3D, 2D, something.
Oh.
Just anything and do something about that. And this is just for, yeah, just for fun and see how far you get in those 30 minutes. And so I'm like from my hobby, if I'm not at work or gaming, I'm doing some like environment, like getting around Pinterest, looking for new inspirations and doing some stuff, some rendering or something to broaden the horizon.
I see. Is that some kind of like competition where a lot of artists sit down together and then someone give a topics and in 30 minutes make something or just a random topic?
Actually, it's exactly that. It's not just it's a competition, but not with the leaderboard. It's just so you throw out that topic and then everyone can show, here, I made this and I made that and I made this this render or this picture in the end. And it's just to see how someone, for example, there was like one thing, there was, the topic was about a meteorite shower. And someone painted a meteorite standing in the shower washing its meteor. And so it's like, to see those things is really, really fun to see what other people think about stuff and then throw your own kind into the mix and see what other people think about that.
I see. That's really interesting. And what is the strangest topic that you ever discovered? Like, besides meteor shower, it's kind of random, but
yeah, I really hope I hadn't said that, because now I have to think. I think it was like mushroom clouds, where
mushroom clouds.
Yeah, where just you think about spores, but there was someone who painted the cloud with a mushroom lying on top of it and having like a drink in his hand on the cloudy beach and having a mushroom on the cloud and the clouds in like shaped them with mushrooms. So it was very, it's kind of hard to describe, but it's there are a lot of strange topics in there. And of course, there are some pretty, pretty nice artworks with this. So really high quality, but also the funny ones is who got some comedy into this. So it's kind of fun seeing that. And this is it in the end.
Wow, that's really interesting. Maybe sometimes I need to try that. That sounds fun.
Yeah, it is. I can tell you.
All right. Thank you. Last question for the trivial question. I'm starting from Dennis. Do you remember as a child, what is your dream job?
This is a good question. Actually, I don't think I really had a dream job. I'm, to be honest, I'm kind of a lazy guy. So I didn't think much about having a dream job. But actually, I can't really give you an honest answer to that. So it was just, I thought, let's see what the future brings. And then it was like, I think what I'm doing right now, I really, really like it. So I think I'm as close to a dream job, if you want to say it, as I can get. So
I see. Not a specific title or a specific job, but something that you enjoy doing and working, right?
Mm. So I really painted a lot as a child. So I wanted to go in. I knew as a child that I wanted to go in a direction with something with artistry and something like in the design kind of way. But I think that's kind of it. So it was like in the middle of my career, I was more in the I don't know what it's called, financial business, and what the Kaufmann, Klerksmann, I think. It's called in English. I don't know really. I don't know quite where the guy who is constantly looking about are we on budget or are we not? And I don't know the English term for that right now. But I was kind of in that department where I had to see if other people did their work or not. And I really didn't like that. So I changed direction and went to the artistry, but in the design kind of way. So this was, I think, the eye opening moment for me while being out of school, that I wanted to do something creative and not something with numbers and figures.
I see. All right. Okay. That's nice. And how about you, Christina? Do you remember?
Yeah, I think the first goal was to become a veterinarian because I loved animals so much.
But
then I figured out that they sometimes or most of the time suffer when they would meet me, and then I couldn't handle that. But when I recall what I liked doing, it was also like based on creativity, so also painting a lot. But I actually also started like writing quite early. So like I tried to write my own kids' novels because I liked reading them so much. And I think I didn't even realize that this could be a job, like that you write for a job. I just wrote ideas and stories because I wanted to have them. I wanted to become a veterinarian, but I think that was too far away from the reality. And the reality, what I now recall, was that I was always really into books and writing and storytelling.
All right. Wow, that's awesome. All right. Okay. Thank you, Christina and Dennis, for answering the trivial question. The reason for this question is usually to make the audience, the listener from this podcast, know a little bit more about both of you and the background from your side. Okay. So we're going to talk about the project that is very, very cool that you're doing. It's a Goethe VR. Can you explain a little bit what is the Goethe VR?
Goethe VR, I think it's a project very dear to our heart because we have this, the novel itself is, as Christina can testify, quite long, both Faust 1 and Faust 2. And Christina did a great job of putting both together in a like 20-minute interactive experience where you can just don the VR glasses, get into in there and get most of the intention of Faust 1 and 2 compressed into that short time frame, and to have like the younger audience who are not that fond of books get into the museum and see, oh, there is something new, I want to try that out and get accustomed to the location there. And maybe then when they're coming out of the VR glasses, they're going to say, this wasn't half as bad. I'm going to look around for the other stuff, which I may have been not that interested in, but then get some kind of new experience within their visits of the museum or of a location.
I see. Wow, that's interesting. Before we deep dive about the project more, maybe like most of the listeners, especially in Indonesia, not too familiar with the book, the Faust 1 and 2. Can you just give a little bit summary, like what is this story about?
And this is why I'm glad that Christina is here.
And this is a really good question, because to summarize Faust, that's really heavy. Like Goethe wrote on this book over 60 years. So this was a lifelong project. He started as a young man and he finished it like just right before he passed away. So in this book, you really, people say you really find the whole life, you know? So you have a plot, that's true. You have like the characters Faust, which is an old professor, and you have Mephisto, that is the devil, and Faust is getting older and tired of life, and he wants to find the perfect moment, and the devil Mephisto seduces him to sign a contract so that the devil shows him like the good moments, and if he finds that perfect moment, the contract is solved, but then he could also like lose his soul at one point. That is the contract. And this is maybe like the plot,
But this is like just the surface of the whole story. And in the story, you find so many things and thoughts about main existential questions. And that's what makes it such a important classic in German or European or worldwide literature, because it also survived so many centuries because there are so many truths in it. So I think I'll stop there. I could keep on talking for hours, but just to maybe give a little bit of an idea of what this book is about.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. Before this session, I tried to find a summary too about the story, and it's quite interesting. Is it the book is popular like in mainstream in Germany, like people in school reading this book, children reading this book, or this is something like the younger generation hasn't read anymore?
I think we can say for all the younger people that we need to read it in school. So we need to have read it once. But I don't know, you can tell more about this, but I think it's written quite difficultly. So even if you start it voluntarily, you are most likely not going to finish it because it's so difficult and so heavy on the mind to read that you don't want to actually read it to the end. But it's still, if you read it once and know what it's about, then you, and I think you can tell about this, you find so many little small details which you missed the first time you read it. So there is so much depth in that book that that's why it has become a classic.
You're totally right. I think this is also why we wanted to transform or adapt this book into VR, because even I find it quite heavy to read, even though I'm reading a lot, but it's like written in verses. So it's not like the common language. The language is old. It's in verses. Therefore, like, as you said, most people feel forced to read it in school. And we thought as a team that it's such a shame because like the story behind it and the dramaturgy and everything that's in it, it's so strong that we wanted to bring it to wider public. And VR is what we think just such a strong medium to transport stories because of the immersion. Like, I think the first medium with such a huge immersion was like books on paper, like, you know, and they still are. And I think the next level of immersion was like movies, and now VR is like obviously the most immersive medium ever. So to combine that and pick out like the strong stories of this old novel and transform it into something more mainstream, I would say. That was the goal. And
I see, because I was quite curious, like, what makes this book is difficult to finish? Is it because like it's too long, the story is too, I don't know, but it turns out like the structure of the storytelling is hard to read. Like you mentioned like a verses.
Yeah, it's the language, but it's also the thoughts behind it. Because as I just said, like this genius of a writer wrote 60 years on that novel. It's like 12,000 verses. So it's the language, but also the thoughts behind it. Like sometimes you really read like 10 verses 20 times in a row, and suddenly like you see, oh, okay. And then when you get the truth behind it, it's just like mind-blowing, because he founds so many great images and words to describe something really big. But it's hard work to find the pleasure behind the book, I really have to admit. But it's such a shame. And I think that's why we wanted to make it more relatable to more people, and somehow also give credit like to those amazing storytellers who I hope not become forgotten, but they have like this dusty image, like this, it's boring, it's hard. But at the end, they are just like amazing storytellers.
We actually started this project called Story Room, I believe it was called. And it was not
Goethe-centric, but it was like, put literature into VR. And this whole thought of making those, as Christina said, those dusty old books into something new so that younger audience would also start to enjoy it. And this was where then Goethe come, where we searched about what could be, which book we could use. And Goethe was that, which I think you have quite a long journey in the beginning, until you found something like Goethe you could use to actually compress and make this story about so that we could do our experience with it.
I see. I think like there's a lot of good book and literature out there, right? And is it like the hardest or the most difficult book to read? That's why you pick this book as the chosen one to translate into VR, or there's another reason why you choose Faust as the project?
That's a really good question, because when we started working on the concept of this whole literature and VR idea, which was back in the days not really common, there were experiences. We only found actually one that was really story based, that is Wolves in the Walls, nobody did that before, like to take the strong stories of literature and put it in VR. And the concept at the beginning was really the idea, like, to make it simply said, like, the more difficult the higher the barrier to read the book, the better to put it in VR, so to say, because it's because it's interesting to do that. And the achievement is quite big at the end if you achieve to translate that difficult text into VR, but also because mostly those books have like such great ideas behind them. First of all, the first book I thought about was Ulysses by James Joyce, which is I think most of the readers all say that this is really the worldwide most difficult book to read. So when I worked on that idea, combining literature and VR, that was actually the main idea to have. But then Faust 1 and 2 is not that far away from that. So
I see. Wow, that's really interesting.
I wanted to charge on you as a team. You and the
All right. Okay, so you already decided this is the book that we want to translate into VR, into the modern medium. And after that, what's the process? Did you gather your team and make them read the book and discuss the book? Or I don't know, what's the process at the beginning?
We actually were quite fortunate because almost all of us read the book, in our childhood, because in Germany it's quite common to have read it then in school. So we just needed a bit of a refresher from Christina that we knew what it was all about, and also those deeper interpretations to know what we're looking for, because we don't want to didn't want to actually put all the story into a chronological order and just go from one station to another, because this would actually be far too long and wouldn't be what we wanted to do, because we wanted to get, as Christina said, the underlying messages which are hidden in the book. We wanted to get the intention over to the people, not just do a recount of what happened in the book. And this was the starting point where we thought that this could work. And what Christina condensed together in this story was actually where we all said, okay, when we read it the first time, we all said, this can work, because we were from we on our part in opposite to Christina, we needed to see if can we do this? Can we really put this story into VR, or do we need some adjustments? And this was the first time where we started discussing, one of the many, many, many discussions we had, like, can we adjust that? Can we do this instead of that, so that the user is more freely in what he wants to do? And is it really possible to do this in VR, or do we have some other restriction where we need to put our focus on so that it really actually works in the end? And this was the moment, I think, where we
where all of this started, where we had many, many, many calls where we just adjusted everything we needed to.
I see. Is it going to be like the summary of the book, like from the chapter one until the end of the book two, or just some scenes from the book that you want to have people to experience it?
As Dennis also said, like it wouldn't be possible to summarize like the whole, because 12,000 verses, I think we would have made an experience that would be like 24 hours long. I think they really had like a theater piece and they played the whole thing from the first verse to the last. And I really think it was 12 hours. So I think if we would make it in VR where people are free, in which pace they would do it, it would be really like 20, 24 hours. So we wanted to make it, we set 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes was the goal, because we wanted to have it as an installation in museums. And then you have to think practical, because you have to also make sure that kind of an amount of people can see it in one day. So that was the goal. And then what was really important was we didn't want to summarize something like unemotionally. We wanted to tell our own story based on the book, but it was our own story that has an own dramaturgy, like with tension, high point, with everything. So it wouldn't have worked to just summarize it. And therefore, at the beginning, like when I started, like after I read it, I think 6 or 7 or 8 times in a row, like to really get everything, the first thing I did was to define which kind of part of that novel I want to tell. And we, as a team, wanted to make it modern. So we wanted to tell the modern parts of that a novel, which has a lot to do with existential questions of the modern human being, like that he's chasing one moment after the other, the pace of living, that is all in that book, and also a bit of critique on capitalism, that is also actually really in the book. And we thought those two topics combined could relate to our users that would experience our VR experience. And based on that, I wrote like this storyline. And then a lot of discussion.
But what I think what needs to be said to this is that what I really like what you did, you took the verses and did not change the verses quite that heavily. Just so they are the original voice lines from the,
that's
from
true.
The book, recorded audio or officially audio, I don't know, recorded for like Mephisto and Faust to say, and just you wrote some lines, I think, just to get like the glue to put it together, that there are those verses you pick from every part of the book to get this one 20-minute experience. And this is what I really like about this, that it's true to the original.
Yeah, you're right. That was also fun to do, but also difficult, because we wanted to have this super modern, exciting new medium VR, but we wanted to really transport not only the message, but also like the beauty of that language. Because when you try to read it, you think, oh, it's hard to read. But when you really have the chance to really listen to it, like to the sound of these verses, and the language is so beautiful. So that's why we wanted to capture as much of it as we could. And I think it's now at the end, I think around 70% are like original quotes from the book. And only 30% that I had to write, as you said, to just make the scenes work and like our storyline work as a whole.
I see. Wow, that's quite interesting. How do you manage to transform from the text, the first, into a world like in three-dimensional? I mean, what's your point of view? Are you the spectator of the things that happening in the world, or you become one of the characters? How it's worked?
I think then we need to spoil some of the fun, but the business we're going to, you are from the perspective of Faust. So you yourself are the one standing there and getting to sign the contract and getting to experience every kind of mischievous deed Mephisto is going to do. He's going to propose some underhanded themes he wants you to experience and want to make this, as Christina said, this perfect moment come true. And so you need to linearly follow Mephisto, what he does, because as Christina said, we have our own story, but it's still the story of Faust 1 and 2. So there is not much freedom of decision for the user, but it's more like a linear experience. But you need this to translate the intention, because you cannot change what's written in the book, or did not want to change what's written in the book. So we had this going for us that we thought to be Faust and not to be a third person omni-perspective spectator would be more immersive, to be the one you are actually talked to by a three-dimensional rendering of Mephisto coming towards you and say, do you want to sign this? Yes, you want to sign this, and stuff like that, so you feel actually talked to.
I see. Wow, that's quite interesting. So the product itself, the Goethe VR, is it only available as installation, or everybody can download it and play it?
For the time this recording, it's only available as an installation. But we are trying to find some models, maybe to get this out to other people. We don't know actually yet, and I think this is not our decision to make. In the end, we need to discuss this. How do we want to publish this, even outside of museum, if we want to do it or not? But as of right now, you can only see it in the museum.
I see. Is it already available? Like everyone can come into Venetian and use it?
Yes, you can. I don't actually know in which the Goethe Institute already have their own installations all around the world. We have 8 available languages right now, or 9, I think. Oh. And also in Bahasa. And
Really?
Yeah. And this was actually one of the parts we wanted to address later, because this was something we really, really underestimated with all of the different languages and having the expertise of people who can actually speak that language we wanted to have. But it's available in a lot of museums. I can't actually tell you in which countries it's available right now, but we are about to roll it out completely as much as possible.
I see. From the experience that the installation already available in Germany, right? How's like? Did you manage to test it or observe how people or young person use it, and what's their testimony?
We don't know actually how it is in the museums itself, but we know from our own experiences and from the premieres we had in like museums around Germany, where we actually saw people using it, and it made us really proud to have people come out of there getting out of the glasses and saying, wow, this was fun. And just telling us that they were kind of overwhelmed with all the impressions they got. Well, because if you are like the first time in VR and you need to get accustomed to all this, we made a one button solution. So user doesn't have more to do than press one button to interact with everything. And this, even that is kind of overwhelming if you are new to all of this. So we had a lot of positive feedback, because people were just as immersed as VR is letting them be, and being in there and seeing everything just around them made them really feel good. And this is, I think, the most fun part of all of this, because you have the people really enjoying it in the end.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. Like after like this project that you managed to convert from one thing that is really heavy, difficult, and maybe children avoid to touch or maybe to read or to understand more, and you convert it into something more modern, more easy to consume, especially for the young people, they can enjoy the story. Do you think in the future, all of this gonna transform into digital, into VR, so they can keep being accessible for the future generation? Or do you think these two different kind of thing that will keep exist side by side?
I think it's really depending on how VR will establish in general. I think at the moment it develops still slowly because there's a higher hurdle. What's that? It's more difficult to get a VR everything to have at home than, for example, when TVs got common, you know, like a TV, you just bought a TV, you plugged it in and you could watch television. And VR, there's still like, it's more difficult. And it's a higher obstacle. Is that the word? Yeah, a higher obstacle to get. But I think if it develops to become more mainstream, then I'm 100% sure that there will be more and more literary adaptions. Because when you look at history, like literature has always been adapted because the stories are so strong. It was adapted in music and theater and cinema. Like if you start thinking about it, there are so many strong literary adaptions like Romeo and Juliet, and you can go on and on and on because you always adapt strong stories, and most of the strongest stories, they come originally from literature. So I would be sure that Goethe would not be the last one, and obviously we would love to do more. So yeah, you can always call us if you want to have another adaptation. We'll be ready.
No, but it's really starting. So VR glass, like the Oculus Quest 2, for example, is now very affordable. And I hear frighteningly many people have one at home where I didn't have expected them to own one. But if it's now going to, as Christina said, is roll out all over the world with the VR and being more accessible for people, then this is, of course, going to be... It would be sad because all the books are going to vanish in the end. But actually, you have both. I think it's just going to be more of them in the end.
There always be the book nerds.
There always be the book
nerds. Needs the paper to be so.
All right, that's amazing. If you mentioned like this is not gonna be the last project, if that's gonna be the second project, what kind of book that you really interested to create the VR experience?
Like,
this is a tough question.
Like, I thought about it already because I enjoyed like this project so much that I could immediately go on with the second one. But I think it would be interesting now that we had this huge novel, like with so many verses and such a huge story, that I would find it quite interesting to maybe now take a poem and turn it into, so that we have like the opposite, that now you have only maybe some sentences and then you build more around it. Now we reduced it, but I think it would also be very, very tempting to take a very beautiful, strong poem and put it into something big and a whole world. So for me personally, that would be really tempting. And maybe it's also nice because we could maybe also realize it in a 5-minute or 10-minute experience to make it even more accessible. So yeah.
I like that idea a lot because you have this room for interpretation, so you can do like every word, every verse, a word for it, and just have this environmental storytelling. This would be perfect for me. So
visually to transport like the emotions, think. Yeah, that's what we already like with Goethe VR a lot, because I think we didn't mention yet that the main goal also was like to have like this whole, it should be a whole experience, not only to experience the story, but like the world itself, the virtual world should be a piece of art itself. And maybe there you can tell more because this was your main job, but we wanted to have it visually really stunning. It should really touch people's emotions also because it should be just a beautiful, like as if you would walk through a painting, so to say.
We had all of this of good for us
taking place in the desert. And we chose the desert because you have this wide environment and have this, you in this museum have a 3 of 3 meters space, but you put on the glasses and then you have this huge desert stretching out in front of you. And you get the people first time in there think about, wow, you have this really whole world inside of this small glass. And then you can go from there and then the environment's going to change. We still stay in this desert environment, but have like more living environments in the end coming as we go further in the story.
I see. Oh, that's quite interesting. Translating from a world based on text, especially hard to read text, right? You mentioned into some work that you create on your imagination. I think your hobbies quite play a role here, Dennis.
Yeah.
From random theme, you can create anything. It will. But is the desert is part of the story, or this is your interpretation?
This actually is your part.
Actually, are some tiny scenes that take, like in the original text, that take place, but it's not more like a desert. It's like more a vast ocean surrounding, like like a beach surrounding. But like the decision for desert was more because we got inspired by the surrealist artists like Salvador Dali or Max Ernst. That was like when we thought, okay, this feels good, like to transport those artistry into VR. And somehow it felt also right for the story that you, as a user, are stunned by the surrounding, but also that you still have so much space that you are also still open to follow the story. Because if you would build a whole city and 1,000 houses and other people running around, I think it would overwhelm you so much that it would be even more difficult to follow the story. And at the end, it turned out to really work out for us, I think.
And of course, in the desert, you can, as Christian said, surrealism is a big word or a big theme we followed in there. And you can do stuff like at one point we have a huge oil ship appearing in the desert just because we had this capitalism and stuff and some kind of underlying messages in there, which we don't want to spoil for everyone who's going to see. And we just with the desert, you have this opportunity to do like anything you want, and you have the space, the virtual space to do anything you want. And don't need to care about, is it really fitting? Do I need to move walls? I can just transition faster from one position to the other.
Wow. That's really interesting. I think I need to talk with someone from Gutensi to Jakarta to find out. You said there's a Bahasa language also, right? So where can we try? I think we need to try it. Really interesting to try. All right. Oh, so this is really, really fun talking to you. I think we almost ran out of the time, almost an hour we already talked. So for the last question, I think what you did is really, really amazing. You can translate something that is usually for younger people is boring, is it hard to learn, is it something not interesting, change it into something really modern and something that all young people can enjoy. For the last question, can you give some tips to people maybe from Indonesia if they want to try to do like what you're doing, translate something heavy, something boring into something fun and interesting? Do you have some tips for them?
I think the most important tip which we all gathered is not the exciting ones, it's communication. It's if the topic is that heavy as one as a book or something, you need to make sure that everyone is on the same page, that everyone is talking about the same thing. And then the next part we had is concept arts. We had so many concept arts just to visualize, because this is such a broad interpretation room that you have so much. Like if I told five people paint me a boat, then we have five different boats. And this is why we needed to do concept arts, to do all the storytelling. We had everything put out in like something we call the World Bible in the end,
where it was just where everything was written down, every concept art was in it that you could see what are we talking about, what do we want to achieve in the end, because you have this much communication running that it's kind of difficult to see, to have everyone think about the same and produce the same result and not go into two different directions. And I think it's just communicate and testing and be try out what you want to do and then have it, see if it works out the way you want to work out.
Yes, I would 100% agree on that. And I think also when you start, then really do it with passion. I think what we really achieved, and I'm so grateful for that experience, that as a team, like we had such an amazing team, like I loved just working on that project. It felt like, it just didn't feel like work because we were driven by so much passion for this subject and the project. And I think if you get excited by an idea, you can be sure that the audience will be excited too. So just really follow your own passion. If people tell you, oh, no, you can't do that, don't take no as an answer. That was also a good learning because you just have to stick to your vision and you find a way. Like we, as Dennis said, we had so many discussions, mm-hmm. but we always wanted to have the best outcome. And that made us find so many great and creative ideas to make it work at the end. So just believe in your idea and follow your passion and have fun. And I think then it will turn out great, hopefully.
Amazing. Yeah. Bolivian of passion, having fun and communication. I think that's really, really important. Thank you, Christina. Thank you, Dennis, for
Thank
your
you
time.
So much. It was so much
really
fun.
Yeah, thanks. So much fun talking to you. And I think, guys, that's it for today. I hope this session, this sharing session from Dennis and Christina can give you all insight and courage to press start your career in the game industry. I am Adam Adesmita. Keep playing games, start making games. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.